just what would it take to make you happy? Remember NASA? Now, just what would it take to make you happy? Usually you get asked that when you're in a situation where you're not acting very happy. But just what would it take to make you happy? Recently, during our business deal, I was asked that question. We want to make sure you're happy. So what will it take to make you happy? Well, that's not as easy as you would think, as you think through all the ramifications of selling a business and putting a business together. Sometimes I don't know what will make me happy. It's because I've only done it one way of my entire life. So sometimes we don't know. I've been trying to remember all day, and maybe I forgot Maggie was asleep, and I get to talk to Doug and Lisa. Remember that song we went to hear down at that music festival down in Missouri where they were singing about being happy? Remember that one?
I don't remember
those, but yeah. I mean, it was something about Christians should be happy. Christians should be happy, folks. They should be joyful and happy. But so much of our religious doings and discussion and everything seems to wind up needing to be extremely sober, extremely serious, almost pious in nature. And it is a sober business that we're talking about. But we're supposed to be happy. In Philippians 3 and 1, we're told to rejoice in the Lord. In Philippians 4 and 4, we're told to rejoice in the Lord always. And in 1 Thessalonians 5 and 16, we're told to rejoice evermore. And in seeing people as we go along, I find that I find few people who know how to sustain and be happy or joyful or glad or rejoicing. There are a lot of people who can be momentarily happy, momentarily joyful or glad or rejoicing, but to sustain it is quite a different story. This time of the year, everybody's trying to figure out what to do to make somebody else happy. We ask our family, what would it take to make you happy? Give me a list of what it would take to make you... It never works. But give me a list of what it would take to make you happy. And so we're always trying to, and many times we're disappointed. I think one of the major things that we as Christians need to learn to do is to be and display our happiness. Job 20, chapter verse 4 says, "Knowest thou not this of old, since man was placed upon the earth, when the triumph of the wicked is short, and the joy of the hypocrite but for a moment?" These things that we have are just for a moment. There are a few things I want to talk about tonight you may not have thought about before. I want to go over to Deuteronomy. I think I've mentioned this before. Deuteronomy, the 33rd chapter. In verse 28. "Israel then shall dwell in safety alone." This is God speaking. Or this is Moses speaking, and then it's going to be God. "Israel then shall dwell in safety alone. The fountain of Jacob shall be upon a land of corn and wine. Also his heaven shall drop down dew. Happy art thou, O Israel. Who is like unto thee, O people, save but the Lord, the shield of thy help, and who is the sword of thy excellency? Thine enemies shall be found liars unto thee, and thou shalt tread upon their high places. And Moses went up from the plains of Moab unto the mountain of Nebo, to the top of Pisgah, that is over against Jericho. And the Lord showed him all the land of Gilead, and to Dan, and all the Naphtali, and the land of Ephraim, the Manasseh, and all the land of Judah, and to the utmost sea, and the south, and the plain of the valley of Jericho, the city of palm trees, unto Zoar. And the Lord said unto him, This is the land which I swore unto Abraham, and to Isaac, and to Jacob, saying, I will give it unto thy seed. I have caused thee to see it with thine eyes. Thou shalt not go over thither." Can you imagine the thrill, the joy that would have been in Moses as he looked out over this vast area as leader of a migrant people that have been wandering around in a wilderness with no place called home, No place that was there, even when they were back in Egypt, it wasn't theirs. No place that was called home for hundreds of years. And now God's chosen this. Do you imagine the joy he felt, the pride he felt, the just, it's over, that this is all done? At the same time, he felt sorrow that he couldn't go in. Man is a very complicated individual emotionally, because we can feel multiple emotions, conflicting emotions at the same time. And while I think that's important, because when we talk about being joyful always, it doesn't mean you always have a smile on your face. People think you're a little weird if you're at the funeral and you're smiling all the way through it. But you always have joy in your heart, and it comes out one way or another. Another one I like to look at is Luke. So he had joy. I just can't imagine what he felt like looking over there and knowing that he'd accomplished that with all the troubles he'd had with the Jewish people and their rebelliousness, etc. Must have been a relief to know it was over. It was over. In Luke, the first chapter, in verse 46, this is one of the most joyous speeches that you can give. This is Mary talking about becoming pregnant and going to be the mother of Messiah. My soul doth magnify the Lord. My spirit hath rejoiced in God my Savior, for he hath regarded the low estate of his handmaiden. For behold, from henceforth all generations shall call me blessed. For he that is mighty hath done to me great things, and holy is his name. His mercy is on them that fear him from generation to generation. He hath showed strength with his arm. He hath scattered the proud in the imagination of their hearts. He hath put down the mighty from their seats and exalted them of low degree. He hath filled the hungry with good things, and the rich he hath sent empty away. He hath helped his servant Israel in remembrance of his mercy. And he spake to our fathers, to Abraham, and to his seed forever. She is happy. She is happy. And the last one I wanted to go to, just sprung into my mind this afternoon, I was writing this out, was in 2 Samuel, the 6th chapter, beginning with verse 13. This is a story of David bringing the ark back home again. And it was so that when they bare the ark of the Lord, had gone 6 paces, 18 feet. Every 18 feet he sacrificed. It must have taken a while to get there. Every 18 feet he sacrificed to God. Had gone 6 paces, he sacrificed oxen and fatlings. And David danced before the Lord with all his might. And David was girded with a linen ephod. So David and all the house of Israel brought up the ark of the Lord with shouting and with the sound of the trumpet. You remember Michael was upset about this because David was out there dancing like an idiot in front of all the people. She thought it was like an idiot. Dancing for joy because the ark was coming back. You ever seen anybody dance for joy, literally? Yeah, you have. Go to a football game. You ever watch a football game? What do they do when they have a touchdown? You'll see all kinds of dances. All kinds of things. Little doodads, they dance for joy, or you accomplish something good, and people they'll all kinds of gyrations they'll do. But if you want to watch real dancing for joy, watch a football game and watch them score a touchdown. They set up nights thinking those things up. David did this when he brought back the ark. You know, our spirit affects other spirits. There's always an obligation when you work with people that you're going to affect them or they're going to affect you. And how you look at things and whether they're joyful or not joyful. And we've always told the people at the office, when you walk in to see a patient, you leave your troubles at the door. You leave your troubles at the door. And I think that's true. I'm trying to read my own writing here. So we have obviously a lot to be happy about as Christians. But I was wondering, then why aren't we always happy? Why are we not happy? What stands in the road of our happiness? So I got busy and I wrote down a list of things that I think can stand in the road of our happiness, that we let stand in the road of our happiness. This is not a complete list, I'm sure. But there are things that we can let stand in the road of our happiness. We need to watch for them. And the first one might be interesting for you, but I think some people I have met and know are afraid of being happy. I think they're really afraid of being happy. They have a fear because it requires a bit of a leap of faith that things are going to turn out all right. Leaps of faith are interesting. You remember which one of the movies was it when they were trying to get the I'm not even sure I can pull out the words to tell you what movie it is. Trying to get the Holy Grail, and they had to go through the three tests.
Crusade.
Last Crusade, is that what it was?
And
you remember what the last one was? He's standing at this abyss. I mean, he's standing on a little ledge, and it looks like you can't even see the bottom of this place. And he remembers that it's a leap of faith. And I remember the scene. He takes his leg and he steps out, and it looks like he's stepping right off into eternal depth. And there's an invisible path there that he steps on and goes forward. Being happy sometimes requires something like a leap of faith. In a sense, Mary and Martha made a leap of faith when Jesus said, "Open up the tomb. Open up the tomb." But Jesus, he's been gone for a while. You know what happens here when people have been gone for a while. Open up the tomb. In Matthew, the 13th chapter, verse 20, in the parable of the seeds, of the soils, it says, "He that received the seed into stony places, the same as he that heareth the word, and anon with joy received it." He really received it, and he was really joyful, yet he hath not root in himself. But dure for a while, he keeps going for a while, but when tribulation or persecution arises because of the world, of the word, by and by he is offended. Sometimes it takes courage to be happy. In this world, it takes courage to be happy. Doesn't mean you don't fear, but you decide you're going to be happy. Second thing I had wrote down was, I think some people resist being happy because they're afraid it won't last. They're just afraid it won't last. And they would just rather stay in their misery than be happy for a while and be reminded of what happiness is and then go back to misery. They're afraid it won't last. I've seen people who were trying to find a spouse. And it appeared from my perspective that they'd found a perfect spouse. But when it got too serious, they backed away because they're afraid it wouldn't last. It wouldn't take that leap. We have not that to worry about. In Hebrews, the 6th chapter, Paul says, "That ye be not slothful, but followers of them who through faith and patience inherit the promises. For when God made promise to Abraham, because he could swear by no greater, he swore by himself, saying, Surely blessing I will bless thee, and multiplying I will multiply thee. And so after he had patiently endured, he obtained the promise. For men verily swear by the greater, and an oath for confirmation to them, and end of all strife. Wherein God, willing more abundantly to show unto the heirs of promise the immutability of his counsel, confirmed it by an oath, that by two immutable things, in the which it was impossible for God to lie, we might have a strong consolation who have fled for refuge to lay hold upon the hope set before us, which hope we have as an anchor," it's solid, "as an anchor of the soul, both sure and steadfast, and which entereth into that within the veil." So, we don't have to be afraid it's not going to last. Our happiness is based in God and our forgiveness and our salvation. We don't have that fear. It's going to last. The third thing I wrote down is, and some of these might be self-reflective. I won't tell you which ones they are. But I believe some people live life in a daze. It's just something they go through. They walk outside, and I walked outside last night taking a dog out. There were coyotes hollering. There was all kinds of sounds. Do you know how many people don't hear those sounds at all? Don't hear sounds, don't smell smells, don't see beauty when it happens all around us because we're too busy, we're going through in a daze. So we need to, if we're going to be happy, I think, find some joy in the little things. In the little things. And I got to thinking in Genesis, and this is kind of a backwards use of this story, but I'm going to use it anyway. In Genesis 25, maybe I'll just tell you the story because it's easier reading it. In Genesis 25, we have Jacob and Esau, and Esau's been out hunting, you remember? And he comes in and he says, I'm starving. And so Jacob makes him this pot of porridge, and he sells his birthright for the pot of porridge because he said, what is my birthright going to be worth to me if I die because of hunger? So this is a no-brainer deal. Now, what I want you to think about, if you're that hungry, I don't know if I've ever been that hungry that I thought I was going to die. I've been really hungry sometimes. I remember one time we had Thanksgiving, and I overate and overate and overate, and an hour later, if you'd been between me and food, you'd run over, because my pancreas kicked out enough insulin for me and a half a dozen other people. It's that happens sometimes. If you're really, 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 really hungry, how good, what I want you to think about is, despite the purpose of the story, how good was that bowl of soup? How good was that bowl of soup? How much did he enjoy that bowl of soup? And how many times we go through things, and because we don't put those kinds of importance on them, we don't even recognize what we're having. Enjoy the taste of them. I used to have a doctor who worked for me. He didn't work for me anymore. A doctor who worked for me that literally, and I see somebody in restaurants occasionally do this, I hope none of you do, literally inhaled his food. There was no taste to it. It was like my black lab eating. You know, we'd go try to find the black lab treat. She'd give her a treat. She takes her arm with it. It's gulp, and it's down. That's the way he would eat. I don't think he ever tasted anything. It would have been interesting to ask him if he liked everything he ate, because I don't think he tasted anything he ate. How much of what we do we just roll along and don't even notice? Don't notice people, don't notice things, don't hear what's going on in nature. We're just rolling along, letting life and time roll off our backs like it was eternal. And it's not. Time's going to end. So I think in order to be happy, one of the things that we can do is try to pay attention to the little things. The odd thing about your senses is, if you start using them, they work better, usually. So, despite what Margaret thinks about my hearing, I can hear things through a stethoscope that other people can't hear, okay? Just because I've done that a lot. People who lose their hearing, their vision tends to get sharper. People who lose their vision, their hearing tends to get sharper. Is that just because they're paying attention? No, actually, it does get sharper. The brain changes. It changes. It changes so it works better. But if you use it more, it'll change without going blind or going deaf. So that's why you hear these stories of people who can see things and hear things that nobody else can. They really can, because their senses are exercised. The biblical phrase, senses are exercised. Well, if you're going to talk about life, maybe being happier and focusing on some of the beautiful little things, maybe we ought to talk about looking at the big picture on the other side. Don't worry about the little things. Don't worry about them. You know, Matthew, the 5th chapter, where Jesus goes through the Beatitudes, these are all big picture things. These are not little picture things. Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. I don't know, as I can always tell you, I enjoy being poor in spirit. Blessed are they that mourn, for they shall be comforted. Do you enjoy that? Those aren't things we enjoy. Blessed are they that mourn. Blessed, happy are they that mourn. Happy in the big picture, maybe, not the little picture. Blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth. Eventually, but not usually. Not usually. The meek aren't the ones that inherit the earth. It's the aggressive, the dominant, that inherit the earth. Blessed are they which hunger and thirst, for they shall be filled. Well, I'm hungry and thirsting. Come on, fill. and so on. These are all things that are big picture items. They're not little picture, they're big picture items. So we needn't worry about the little things. Obviously, we talk about Mary and Martha here in Luke, where Mary and Martha were serving Jesus, and Martha complained about Mary listening to Jesus instead of helping out, and Jesus told Martha that Mary had chosen the better thing because she saw the bigger picture. Now, what do you think Jesus would have said if he said, Joe is coming to the house tomorrow? Do you think it's okay for Martha to do all the serving and Mary to sit on her duff? No, that wasn't the big picture. The big picture was Jesus was there. That was the big picture. Sometimes I think we have trouble being happy because we lack trust in God. I want to tell you and remind you of the story of Abraham and Isaac. And again, I want you to look at the story a little bit different because as I thought about it, a lot of biblical stories, you only get half the story. You only get it from one perspective. Now, Abraham and Isaac is one that you get from two perspectives, but not the third. You get it from God's perspective, and you get it from Abraham's perspective, but you don't get it from Isaac's perspective. Okay? So let's think about it. We've got a half-grown, if not grown, adult male, fairly strong, he's active, who his daddy, who's over 100 years old, takes up into the mountain and tries to offer him and does offer him as a sacrifice. I always wondered, how did Abraham get Isaac on that altar? How did he get him tied up? Was Isaac a willing partner in all that? What do you think? I don't know if a 100-and-some-year-old man can tie up a 20-year-old man. And if that were true, and you're talking about Abraham having a leap of faith, that if he kills a son who he said, God gave me him and God can give me him back, Isaac was making a leap of faith too. Because he was allowing it to happen and trusting in God. Again, in Matthew, the 5th chapter, worry is the opposite of trusting in God. Matthew 5 and here we go. Well, I could look right at that a minute ago. My other Bible. Here we go. It's 6. That's why. 6. This is where Jesus, in his inaugural address, says, if you looked at the flowers and if you looked at the birds, and you figured out that they don't worry about this stuff, how they're going to be clothed or what they'll eat and all that other stuff, and he ends up by saying that each day has sufficient evil in itself for us to confront. And with God we can. But if I don't trust God, then I'm constantly in a state of worry and anxiety because I'm fearful that I can't handle whatever circumstances are coming down the line. With God, I can. Okay, that's 5. 6. Why can't I be happy sometimes? You know, I don't know if you notice this or not, but people are just aggravating. Have you noticed that? People are just aggravating and frustrating sometimes. We all are aggravating and frustrating sometimes, except for me. We're all aggravating and frustrating at times. And think about Jesus and how he dealt with that. He had the Pharisees on one hand who were just raising Cain every time he turned around, and then he couldn't even get his own followers to keep up, as Matt read this morning about the loaves. He just fed them twice out of nothing, and they were worried about going hungry. Oh, ye of little faith. People can be aggravating and frustrating. So how am I happy with aggravating and frustrating people? You know, people are interesting, even if they are aggravating and frustrating. There's good in everybody. I take care of some pretty weird characters. I have a new nurse practitioner that goes in with me sometimes, and raise their eyebrows at people. I take care of some motorcycle gang people and all kinds of weird stories I could tell you. And they're interesting. They're interesting people. There's some good in all of them. There's some good in all of them. And if we hunt for it, instead of concentrating on their tattoo or how they smell or what they're wearing, then we can let our happiness shine through. Sometimes I'm not happy because I can't seem to reach my goals. I'm frustrated. Frustrated. The thing about goals is I believe goals are very necessary, but I believe they're very necessary to change them from time to time. You know, I don't know what Cain's goal was when he started out with Abel to sacrifice to God. I don't really understand what his goal was. He was supposed to be sacrificing in honor of God. And God said, after he gave the wrong thing, said, if you give the right thing, then you'll be all right. No problem. That apparently wasn't his goal. He needed to change his goal, like Paul did. You know, Paul was the murderer of Christians. This week I had that brought up at the office. Kind of got my toes stepped on, and should have. Because someone brought up that Charles Manson had died. Charles Manson, those of you who are old enough to remember, was the man who instigated and directed the slaughter, was the word, it wasn't murder, slaughter of multiple people in California many, many years ago. He had a following of people that went with him. And it came out that he had died, 68 years old or something, had died in prison. And someone made the comment, and I agreed with it, he is roasting somewhere, and he probably needs to. And somebody else made a comment, oh, maybe not. Maybe he learned something about God before the end. And I thought, ooh, somebody's a step or two ahead of me, because Charles Manson didn't deserve hell any more than I do. So why would I say that? And that's dangerous. That's dangerous. How did I get off on that? Oh, Paul, mass murderer, and changed into the apostle to the Gentiles. He changed his goals. Sometimes I'm not happy just because I hurt. There are people who hurt. Physically, emotionally, mentally, spiritually, they hurt. And if you go to 1 Corinthians, I'm not going to read this because my voice is going to go here shortly. If I read this, Paul in 1 Corinthians gives a whole list, the 2 Corinthians, he gives a whole list of the things he'd endured. Whole list, and you thought he'd thrown up his hands and quit several times. But the same guy in Philippians who said, I can do all things, I'm going to forget what's behind and look to the future and go on. Same guy. So hurting is not an excuse. And last is the fear of changes. As we get older, we hate change, and change makes us unhappy. Okay? It makes us unhappy. Unless you're Doug Fearantine, most people keep, maybe I judge this wrong, maybe I ought to take a poll, but most people keep their things in their house in relatively the same places so they could walk around in the dark. Does everybody else move things around like Doug? About every two jigs, he's changed the house all around, and you tried to walk through there in the dark, you'd kill yourself real easy. Our house, that damn port's at that same place for ever since we've had that damn port. That's the way I like it. It's right there. I can find it. And I don't like changing things that don't have to be changed. I don't like changing things so much that I always feel guilty when I trade cars. You feel guilty when you trade cars? I always feel guilty when I trade cars because I feel like I'm somehow disloyal to the old car, whatever that means. Mason, I know you don't have that affliction, so don't worry about it, but no loyalty there. But change is something that man just had a terrible time with. And can you imagine the change that Adam and Eve went through when they were driven out of the garden from the paradise that was the Garden of Eden to the world that was outside, and what God did to that world outside to make it even more of a challenge for them? The culture shock they went through going out, was amazing. And the Bible talks about a culture shock like that too. The Jews who have been told for years and years and years and years that they were God's chosen and suddenly have to take in Gentiles as God's chosen too. And what did they do? They resisted the change. And even the ones that became Christians, some of them went back and were wanting to be Jews again. Paul told them in Galatians how soon you return to those old ways. Because we don't like change. We just don't. And yet we live in a world that is based on change. Based on everything is changing. What you have on today is a change from 25 years ago. How you got here is a change from 25 years ago. What you ate is a change from 25 years ago. How you fixed what you ate is a change from 25 years ago. What you had in your bathtub is a change from 25 years ago. How you heated the water is a change from 25 years ago. Go, go, go. Tell me something that stayed the same. Tell me something that stayed. Everything's changing. I'm even using computers. Now, when that happens, you know the end is near. Okay? The end is near. Fear of change. I just think we need to try to let our joy show through a bit more. You know, the angels are spoken in the Bible of being joyful in three instances only. They were joyful at the creation. Job says they were joyful at the creation. They were joyful at Christ's birth. Remember, they sang. And they were joyful at a sinner's repentance. That's the only three places that's mentioned that angels are happy. And we're just not going to fit in if we don't learn how to be happy. And sustain that happiness. Sustain that happiness. Doesn't mean we won't have troubles. Doesn't mean we won't be puzzled and aggravated and agitated at times. But underlying it is always going to be a joy that these things are just temporary stuff. And I already have the other. I've already deposited the other that makes me happy day in and out. I've deposited my acceptance of Jesus' sacrifice. It's deposited. It's there. And the only one that can withdraw it is me. It's there. It's not going anywhere unless I withdraw it. We all need to be happier people. Life's too short to be sour and looking at bad things and trying to find bad things and complaining about bad things. Life's way too short. We complain about it going by so fast, but we don't do the things we need to do to slow it down and make it enjoyable. These are my thoughts for this evening. If there's anyone here that would like to take advantage of the invitation, we'll offer that as we stand and sing.